Welcome to Hot Springs Village Inside Out, a weekly podcast where Hot Springs Village, Arkansas is the star. Join me, Randy Cantrell, and my co-host Dennis Simpson as we discuss the history, facts, people, places, events, lots more surrounding Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. Visit the website at hotspringsvillageinsideout.com.
Hey, Dennis Simpson and Randy Cantrell here again with another episode of Inside Out, Hot Springs Village, Arkansas, the show where Hot Springs Village is the star. And we have a star, in my opinion, today. Oh, my goodness. If you like controversy, if you like business and keeping things stirred up, you're going to love our guest today, aren't they, Greg?
Maybe.
head troublemaker and restaurateur in Hot Springs Village, Greg Jones from the Beehive, the Explore Lakeside, the Explore Isabella, the Explore Granada, from Cracoos, from Explore DeSoto. And I think the philosophy that what I'm getting from you, Greg, is that you don't want to take over every restaurant, just the ones that come close to yours. Is that right?
I live over here near Lake Balboa, so I drive around and around the lakes. I want basically all the restaurants around here by the lake. So you forgot the bakery, Artfully Baked and Brewed, as well. So you forgot one. And our food trailer, you forgot that one too.
Well, so you keep adding them on so quick. You keep adding them on so quick. Randy, I tell you what, I'm eager for you to hear Greg's story, how he got to the village and why he had to open a Beehive.
Yeah, me too. Sure. Yeah. So, we came here from Dallas, Fort Worth. We lived in Texas for 26 years. We lived in Fort Worth for 10 and Plano for 16 up by Frisco, for quite some time. We actually discovered the village back around 2000 with some friends of ours who inherited a piece of property. So not unlike a lot of other people that wound up here through friends, brought them up here. And we kind of started to fall in love with this place. And, people ask me a lot about, Arkansas when I was in Texas. They're like, they kind of turn up their nose and say Arkansas. And we said, yeah, it's the closest place to Dallas that doesn't look like Texas. I grew up in Georgia. My wife grew up in Virginia. So we were kind of used to trees and mountains and hills and seasons and things like that. So we actually started to come up here in around 2000. We bought some property here in 2003. We built a kind of a guest house here on the lake in 2006. And then we added on to that and moved up here permanently about seven and a half years ago or so. And, I'd never been in the restaurant business, always been in the technology business, ran a huge division for TI worldwide, 700 employees, hundreds of millions of dollars, all kinds of fun stuff, traveled the world, ate at lots of restaurants, sat at lots of bars, did all that kind of fun stuff all over the place. But, when we moved up here, we were actually at a concert over at the Woodlands Auditorium one night. It was a Blues Brothers tribute band, and it was phenomenal. Everybody had a great time. We were all dressed up, all that sort of thing. We got out of there about 9:30, quarter of 10, with our friends. We're like, let's go get a drink. Oh, well, I guess we got to drive to Hot Springs because there's nothing open in the village at 9:30 on a Saturday. So I knew about this building over on Menorca, which was actually owned by the guy that built my house, and he used it to make cabinets and stuff. And he had passed away, 10, 12 years earlier, and the building pretty much just sat empty. They closed up the flower shop, the Beehive flower shop, which was there. And just his wife, his widow, basically just kept the building empty for the whole time. I went back to her in 2017 and said, hey, I got this idea. We want to open kind of a hangout place over here. We're going to kind of gut your building. Build all new stuff in there, put in a kitchen, have a really cool bar, have a lot of live music. And after she looked at me crazy, I don't know what you're talking about. That's no one's going to do that in the village. I was like, well, we're going to give it a try. So we worked together with her and we opened the Beehive in February of 2018. And it was very, very interesting times because it was unlike anything that had been here in the village. We were open till 11 o'clock. Wow. 11 o'clock
at night, at night,
so it was at night. Exactly. And we were doing all fresh food. We didn't have a fryer. Nothing like that. We did craft beers, which I have another story about craft beers, about how the craft beer guys wouldn't even come out here. But we do craft beers over there and it's been phenomenally successful. We've been open 3.5 years now over there. It's been great. A lot of support by the village. And kind of one thing led to another. And, you know, all of a sudden now I'm like in the restaurant business. I've never been in the restaurant business before. Learned a lot about the restaurant business, though.
For those of you who have seen some of my video shows before on video venues, village venues, I'm sorry. I interviewed a crazy guy about 3 years ago who had just bought and started a beehive, which we were like, what are you thinking? Now, this is a whole lot of fun, but you are, you know, everybody in the village wants the $2 beer. They want the rubber chicken and they want the same thing every night. And then you can roll up the doors at 7:30 and we're back home watching Matlock, right? But that's not what this guy who I interviewed said. He said that he was going to take the Last Chance restaurant and turn it into a higher end food forward place. And I said, why are you calling it the Explorer Lakeside? I mean, it's the Lakeside Explorer, right? Just call it a Lakeside or Explorer. He said, well, because down the road, there may be other restaurants in the village.
He's a visionary.
Right. After 3 years, it is my pleasure to interview somebody again who now has multiple restaurants in the village and made a liar out of me. I don't know if you, I don't think on camera I did the big eye roll thing, but I was thinking it like more. What? Tell us about just the classic story about the craft beer, if you would.
Yeah. So when we opened or about to open the Beehive, I knew we wanted to have some different offerings there. You know, some craft beers. I love craft beers. I've had them all over. I have an office, you know, I had an office in Denver at the time. We used to do craft beers all the time. And I actually called a lot of the craft beer distributors and they're like, there's no market for craft beer in the village. You know, I mean, closest thing you get to craft beer out here, maybe Shinerbach. I mean, that's probably about really as far as it would go. And so I did eventually convince one of them, Bubba Brews Brewing Company, who is a local brewer in Hot Springs. I convinced their sales guy to bring me some craft beer because he was delivering to DeLuca's Pizza downtown. It wasn't that far. It was headed this direction anyway. He said, well, I'll come out there, you know, maybe once a month and bring you a couple of kegs. That's probably about what you'll sell, you know, something like that. And so he did. And we are the largest seller of Bubba Brews Brewery's beers anywhere, even on top of their own restaurants. We sell more of their beer than they do. So it's turned out to be pretty lucrative. And of course, as we got more successful with that, every craft brewer wants to be here in the village with our restaurants, including the cool new little one right outside the village, Stud Duck. We even have his beers on tap here as well. So we introduced the village to lots of craft beers, and it's been really, really fun.
And the Stud Duck, tell them what the flavor was, Randy.
We had Stud Duck make us a special beer. It's called the Pollinator. It's a sweet tea honey beer, and we had the naming contest at the Beehive and at Lakeside, and the winning name was the Pollinator.
Clever. Or
a tea-based beer. Tea.
Yeah. Sweet tea-based beer. It's very tasty.
It is. It's very tasty.
Unlike anything else we had, for sure.
Randy, what was your experience at the Beehive, my friend?
I've not yet been.
What?
I have not yet been. I've got to go. No, I didn't know anything, Greg. I was your prototypical person. I came to the village in 2018 for the first time, spent all of our time just out and about in nature. Dennis, it had to be at least the third visit over there before I went to any restaurant. And then I think it was home plate, and that was the only one I went to, and it was perfectly great.
Yeah.
Came back five times, Greg, last year, of course, during the pandemic. So didn't go anywhere. Oh no, it was on the list. I was hoping to go last year, had a trip planned, and then the pandemic happened. And it's like, well, forget it. We're going anyway. So we came over, but you know, we were respectful, didn't venture out. So yeah, the pandemic put the kibosh on my plan, but oh no, it's been the first thing on the list once the pandemic opens. I'm shocked at a guy that ran a ton of business for TI and you end up in the restaurant business. So, okay. As a business guy, help me with the mental leap. I realized
I had this problem too. I had this problem too.
I realize it was this great idea, but it's also, you're a smart enough guy to know the failure rate of the restaurant business. So walk me through that.
Yeah, well, I actually also started five startup companies that were all venture capital based. So I know the whole thing about, you know, wins and losses and all of that fun stuff. And it was kind of interesting because I still have a pretty good ownership in a technology company that's based in Denver still. And my co-founder there, we founded that company back in 2012. And my co-founder the other day asked me a question. He said, you know, what is it? You took a pretty big pivot, right? I was a high-end CTO technology guy, speaker at conferences, all of that stuff, right? And he said, and now you're like in the restaurant business, you know, what is it that you're can apply from what you knew from, you know, what you did and, you know, in the technology world? I said, it's exactly the same, right? I mean, we've got sales, that's our service people. We got production, that's everybody that works in the kitchen. We got logistics, that's everybody that orders all the product. We got marketing, you know, that's the people that help us market and sell what we're trying to do. So it's not terribly unlike what we did in the technology space. You know, not quite as highly educated people in most cases, because of course in the technology space, we're pretty much all college educated folks, but really it's a lot of the same thing, right? I mean, it's still meeting with customers, understanding their needs and developing products that fill those needs. And that's what we do.
It's awesome. It's been awesome to just read about it and learn from a distance. I mean, your name was one of the first names because the Beehive had such a reputation. I did a lot of Airbnb, do a lot of Airbnb. Again, I'm in Dallas, Fort Worth. I'm that guy who's hoping to be where you guys are one day, at least on a, I don't know, a 60-40, a 50-50 kind of thing. But the Beehive came up. It came up very, very early on with every Airbnb host. I mean, the reputation of the place absolutely is spectacular. Every host that we have had of any Airbnb and VRBO has said, well, let me tell you where you got to go. And it's the first place mentioned. So I'm a smart enough guy that tells you something. I don't care what the market over there is. I don't care what the competition is. You've got it. So yeah, kudos. Well done.
Thanks.
Well, I think, you know, we have some history to come back on just a little more with Greg, but at the same time, I can't wait. I'm dying to hear Greg tell the rest of what's going on. You know, we just got through interviewing in a previous episode, Joseph, and it's funny, he had some of the same story. You know, whatever I did somewhere else, I was able to pick up and bring it here. It's not, you know, and the thing, Randy, you may not see is the time when I'm with Greg and I see what he's doing, he has the glamorous, glorious life. Filling out paperwork all day long. He sits in his office and fills out W-2 forms. And it looks very privileged. It looks very glamorous from this side, you know, very, very glamorous, you know.
Right.
But
yeah, the restaurant business has really short hours to boot. So there's that.
I only work, you know, 2-3 hours a day, 4 days a week. It's really.
Yeah. Trish lets him decide which half day is he going to work, which 12 hours.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I was going to mention there's a piece of this for villagers inside and villagers outside that's going to be really important. Greg, you took over some of the POA restaurants, okay, and going to implement those in a sane way, it looks like, which is a difference of some sort maybe. But it looks like the POA could save, and I'm being generous here, hundreds of thousands of dollars by renting these spaces to you versus running it themselves. Fill us in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, there's a couple of things that I think we bring to the table that, you know, or maybe we're missing when they were trying to operate these restaurants. One is a sense of entrepreneurial spirit, right? I mean, my team, myself, we own these restaurants. We're going to make them successful no matter what, right? We're not, you know, a company employee, you know, it is us, right? So for us, it's our livelihood, it's our pride, it's our name, you know, that's on these restaurants. And so I think that's one thing that we bring different. Two is, you know, my technology background, I have a little bit. We have some very cool technology in the back end of our systems, right, that helps us understand exactly where we're spending our money, how much our food costs, what we should sell it for, all of those things, all of our inventory controls, et cetera. Help us do metrics and understand the measurements of how we're doing as a company across all these restaurants. And, you know, I think those were two kind of big missing elements when the POA was running them. You know, plus, I mean, I think the other thing too, is that I think that, you know, we do a much better job of marketing. You know, we're all over social media. We're involved in the community. We do a lot of work with different arts people and, you know, the symphony and all kinds of people here, you know, as well. So we're a good corporate citizen. I think that helps us too. Right. So I'll tell you that, you know, when we had to close for COVID, I was really impressed with the village and how they support us. We closed for the 2 months we had to close during the COVID last year. You know, our employees we couldn't pay them. We had no income. Right. And so we did two free events over at Lakeside, drive-bys basically, one for barbecue and one for fried catfish. And we had a line of cars that went from the lake, from the restaurant, all the way to the end of the beach and all the way back. That's probably almost a mile long line of cars,
yeah,
of people that wanted to just come by just to support our employees. We donated all of the proceeds from both of those events to all the employees. And that was the only money they got really for a couple of months. Wow. And we had a lot, and we ran out of food. I mean, we took and sold everything we had. I donated all the food that we had in the restaurant. Right. And we sold every bit of it. We still had people who would just ride by and just hand them money. It was truly inspirational. You know, what we had built, you know, the reputation, our employees, you know, and how we were supported by the village. And that led me to think, hey, we can do more of this and we can be even better here in the village than we have been so far. And so all of those things, I think, lead us to, you know, why I think we're going to be, you know, very successful in these other restaurants in the POA that at the golf courses, because that's just our nature. That's just what we're going to do.
Wow. You know, and part of that story, I really had no idea. I was going to say also, we picked up some of the, you picked up some of the other the other restaurants like DeSoto and so forth. But at the same time, you got a little Cajun. Tell me about that.
We did. We actually met a guy that actually started a little Cajun food truck originally. He didn't have anywhere to cook, so we loaned him our kitchen at the Beehive to cook on Sundays and Mondays because we're closed on Sunday, Monday. So we started having a really good relationship with him. We kind of helped him get launched. We helped him with, you know, purchasing and inventory and things like that to help him get going. He eventually did rent a small space over there right outside the West Gate. And we continue to work with him for, you know, for quite a while. We've been working with him for over a year now. And as of May 1st, his restaurant and he himself and all his employees also joined the Explore Restaurant Group. So they're now part of our group also. And we're going to take and launch some of the concepts and the recipes and things that he had developed into a really cool Cajun and seafood restaurant at Granada, which, wow, I think is going to be phenomenal when we get that going here in about a month.
Randy, that's any awesome questions?
No, that's awesome. Hey, for a guy that went to LSU, went in dumb, came out dumb too. That's you got Cajun stuff. I'm in. I'm all
we got
in.
Cajun stuff. It's actually really good. We even do crawfish boils, all kinds of fun stuff.
So. The photographs of the catfish, you know, get me every week, you know,
you'll be here this weekend. We got a big catfish catered event here this weekend. You can come check it out.
Oh man, you're killing me, man. You're killing me, Greg.
I think within a month or so, we're going to have something else pretty big too. And this has really got me excited. This should be awesome. Greg?
What?
Yeah, you?
We do have some really cool stuff coming up. We are having, I assume you're talking about the 4th of July event that we're talking about?
I think they're still going to have that holiday, I think, this year. I think that's a going concern.
Yeah, there's kind of a really cool 4th of July. And in the past, you know, the village has done fireworks, but that's been kind of the extent of the 4th of July. This year, we're actually going to have a 4th of July festival that we are putting on in conjunction with the POA, where we're going to have 3 different bands, live music, all kinds of food from all our restaurants, beer, all kinds of fun stuff down at the beach all day, basically starting at 4 o'clock at the beach this year. It's going to be a phenomenal festival. Everybody's going to have a great time. We were actually down there today walking the site, working out the logistics of where we're putting everything. It's going to be a great time. And we're having, as the headliner, one of our best bands. It's a group of kids actually from Little Rock called Bad Habit. They just got out of high school. They play some phenomenal 80s and 90s classic rock songs that, you know, even their parents may even be predated their parents, but they are phenomenal. And they're a really, really fun group. So we're going to have a great time down there on the 4th of July. It's going to kind of go on from about 4 o'clock until after the fireworks, which will be about 10, probably when we start wrapping up. Well,
Randy, have you ever had the chance to be at the fireworks show?
I have not.
They completely block off the dam of Lake Balboa on both sides. And on one side, there's Balboa Baptist Church, and they'll have the buses from Jesseville bring people in. And from the other side, they'll bring in people from Christ of the Hills United Methodist with the Fountain Lake buses. And so you'll see, Greg, 2,000 people more?
More than that this year, for sure. If the weather's nice, I would, because of everybody wants to get out, it would not surprise me to see 3,000 or 4,000 people down there this year at the lake.
Yeah, and as usual, you'll run out of food. I think that's what you do. Is that not?
We're going to try not to, because, you know, part of the owning these restaurants is making money, and if we don't have any food, we can't make money. So I'm going to try not to do that.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, no, it's going to be a phenomenal fireworks show, too. We got some statistics on that. The finale, the fireworks, has over 400 shells in it. Just really? The finale. Yeah, it's gonna be really great this year.
And as always, let me follow up. That's gonna be brought to us by Ike Eisenhower.
Yes, Ike Eisenhower State Farm Insurance. That's right.
Been a fantastic citizen for the community for as long as I've ever heard. You know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Now,
you know, we're looking forward to opening up some of the other restaurants as well. We're working on. We just actually finished some of the redecoration at the Isabella Golf Course to make it a very cool diner. We're doing kind of breakfast and lunch there. Which is kind of fun. And soon we'll be working on DeSoto. And our goal at DeSoto is to open a kind of a seasonal farm to table type of dinner, limited format, very changeable menu, relatively small seating area, and to have something truly unique in terms of cuisines out there focused on local meats, produce, vegetables, et cetera, at that facility, changing with the seasons basically down there quite often. So, you know, Dennis, you and I talked about this before. I mean, when we open these restaurants, you know, there's a lot of people asking for this and asking for that, you know, and my goal all along is that we're not going to open restaurants or have cuisines that compete with the other restaurateurs here. I don't believe that's in the best interest of the village itself. There's plenty of space for all of us. I mean, we got Italian restaurants and we got home plate, you mentioned, you know, Southern cooking restaurants. We've got pizza places, Mexican places, you know, all kinds of cool places. And so, you know, it's not my goal to try to necessarily try to take away business or run those people off. I don't want to do that. I want us all to work together and try to build this place to the best it can be.
Well, I tell you what, and we need to kind of come back to that for a minute. For example, and Randy and Greg too, Randy and I have been talking about making a show about the history of the village, some of the original history. And we talk about the DeSoto Club. We just kind of flippantly say the DeSoto Club. Well, that was a building designed by Faye Jones from the Northwest Arkansas Architectural School, who has his own school now named after him. And Faye Jones was one of the most prominent of the Frank Lloyd Wright students. The entire west end of the village was designed. The sculpture was designed by him. The building at DeSoto was designed by him. It's frankly a historic place, and it's an art place if you know what you're looking for. And that said, it is a big restaurant. I mean, how many people would it seat?
About 300.
Really?
All on one level, one floor. Yeah, it's a big place.
It's huge.
It is a really big place. So that will be like a boutique farm to table?
So what we're doing over there is we're actually doing a lot of events there because we can seat a lot of people. And then we've worked out some changes to the interior so that we can kind of wall off or make it look smaller on one end. And so we can do that with this kind of smaller format restaurant cuisine that we're going with. You know, I think it's going to be super popular. It may get really hard to get into, but I think that's going to just be the way it is over there. Because I think that's something that I think would be really, really cool here for the village. It's kind of like the, you know, nobody wanted craft beer. Well, let's see if people want some really good seasonal food with some really unique ingredients, because we've got some fantastic chefs in our company, and we'd love to be able to show off some of those talents. And hey, you know, maybe shoot for the stars. Maybe we'll get a Michelin star. Who knows?
Now, from a
guy, the only one in Arkansas,
from a guy who rolled his eyes when you said there would be might be other Explore restaurants, I'm not going to say anything right now. I'm like, okay, Michelin star, yeah.
No, and I'm betting on Greg. If I'm a betting man, I'm betting on Greg.
you oh, what, Randy? What is it with you and that whole winning horse thing? Well, I mean, what would you do that, right?
Hey, the guy's got a proven track record. I got a question. Business guy to business guy, Greg. Yeah. So the thought process, so this new concept, I'm just curious as a business owner, how that decision is made. What does that look like? Have you got an inner circle? I mean, you're clearly a guy who really listens to what the market wants, but a market probably doesn't even know about this concept until you do it. So what does that look like behind the scenes?
Well, I mean, I think that's, you know, like I said, I've started several companies, and when you go out and start companies, people don't know what's possible until you kind of tell them what's possible, right? And we do a lot of that here at our place, right? And yes, I do have a kind of a core set of customers and advisors. We actually did some focus groups as well, over the course of last month, and talked to them a little bit about our concepts. Very well received. In fact, the whole concept for the farm to table actually came out of one of those focus groups. So, you know, so there's a lot of great ideas that come from these. We see, and I talk to lots of customers every day, every week. And so, you know, it is somewhat, you know, we've got to, at some point we have to kind of make a decision and then just go for it and see what happens, right? It's like having craft beers at the Beehive. We're going to just try it. We think it's going to work. We're not going to have a fryer. We're not going to sell chicken fried steak. Let's just see what happens. And, you know, hopefully it turns out okay. And it did so far. So that's kind of what we
No do. Chicken fried steak. No chicken fried steak. Are you crazy?
No, no fryer. No microwave either, by the way. What? We don't have any microwaves at any of our restaurants. So we don't do microwaves either.
Well, Randy, I wanted to mention to you real quick. I wanted to share one of the reasons why there's restaurants at each one of the golf courses is simply because that was one of the charters of the POA, was that the POA was to try and feed golfers. And Greg, address this just for a second at Granada and Isabel and some of these places. You know, you've taken over, and when you look at it, people go, well, it's not open the same hours it used to be. No, but it's going to make money. So, yeah. I mean, address some of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the challenge, you know, when the POA opened the restaurants, you know, you mentioned the Soto Club, which was kind of the country club. So it has a big kitchen. It has a big kitchen that we can leverage for prep food and a lot of other things for a lot of our other locations. The other golf courses do not have big kitchens. They were designed, those places were designed mostly as snack bars for people to get food at the golf course. Isabella, for example, its kitchen is not even as big as the kitchen of my house. I mean, it's tiny. Right. So, I mean, they weren't designed necessarily to have full service restaurants, although they have had tried to do full service restaurants in most of them at one time or another. You know, part of the challenge is that, you know, they all also had kind of a very similar cuisine. They had kind of all the same food. And so you get to this mode. It's like, OK, well, where are we going to go to eat if we go out to eat one, the other? There's nothing, there's not a draw, right? There's not a reason to go to one over the other. And that's really what we've been trying to focus on and explore, is to have different cuisines, different offerings, so that, okay, yeah, maybe I want Cajun today. Oh, maybe I want seafood today. Oh, maybe I want, you know, I want some really good barbecue today, or I want scallops or whatever. And you make those places destination restaurants, that changes the whole numbers, the whole dynamic around that, right? Because then you can start drawing people to come there for purpose, as opposed to just coming there because they're hungry, right? So, yeah. So I think that's been a challenge, I think, certainly the POA had, and that's something that we're focused on, you know, having different cuisines and things around that. And that's why, because we think we can make them destination restaurants, not only for people here in the village, but people visiting the village and people from the surrounding area as well.
Randy, someday there will be somebody we have on our show that I'm not impressed with, but so far we're batting 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're only, you know, we only had two pitchers throw at us, but so far we're doing okay. We're doing okay. Yeah. I'm super impressed, Greg, as a guy that, is a small business guy, much smaller than TI. Yeah. Really, really impressed. I would, here's what I think, Dennis, and as the guy who's clamoring and lusting to one day be a resident in the Village, albeit part-time, but still, I get all the POA hubbub and I get everything, but the fact that here's an entrepreneur who's got big skins on the wall and who's got the wherewithal and the resources to pull it off. I mean, the fact, Greg, that you, I mean, just the new restaurant concept is impressive to me, which is why I asked the question, because I already knew the answer, even though we hadn't talked. And until today, we haven't even met. I mean, this is a gentleman who's not the smartest guy in the room, who listens, who pays attention to the market, who wants to deliver value, who puts customers. So yeah, kudos. And I'm a big fan. I'm a convert.
Imagine it working, huh? What a concept. Yeah. Like it has been. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's time for some innovation, but I get that people are resistant to change, and he's right. I mean, coming from the technology sector, and we all know this, you know, we don't always know what we want.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wanted the iPhone. Nobody wanted the iPod, but
we couldn't get
it. Nobody knew it was even possible until it was there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Well, I want to mention one other thing real quick as we talk about the profile of the POA. And I know I can hear in my mind, I can hear naysayers that like, we're funding and we're sponsoring. And as Miss Stephanie Heffer says, who I think the world of and think she's a really smart girl, her comment was, there's never been a time in the 50 years of the POA that we have not subsidized a restaurant. And you're saying that we're buying his food? No. The POA provides the buildings for free, many times the power for free. Of course, this basis, and I don't know your contract, Greg, I don't want to know, but isn't that right that based on the criteria, it's just a different contract? They do give some support.
Based on the criteria of our contract, we cover all the expenses they have to operate those buildings for the space that we occupy in those buildings.
So any reoccurring expenses, gas, electric, whatever?
All of the operating expenses of the space that we operate out of, we cover.
Wow. And that can be expensive. I know it can. Those numbers add up. So what is the
next body step still, a body still has to know what they're doing with it. And he clearly does. Exactly. So, you know, I'm bold enough to say that the people that want to listen, we all know there are people that walk around with just bags of rocks looking for glass houses, throw them as hard as you want. I don't care. It doesn't matter. The fact is you don't have the whatever, you know, including the brain power and including the energy, including the intel, and all of the things that a guy like this brings to the table to pull it off. I mean, to your point, if you were somewhat rolling your eyes at some of his prior claims and dreams, you know, I'm a guy who doesn't get it. But again, I'm a guy who's all in about business, all in about entrepreneurship. It's largely what makes our country what it is. And a ton of innovation comes from it and a ton of great things. So the good news is the people that are throwing rocks, I got a feeling they're patrons of the restaurants that this man owns. So that's kind of fun to me.
Yeah. I can't tell you how much of that has happened. Absolutely.
You need a sign.
You need a sign
out front that says, leave bag of rocks here. Leave rocks here. Just don't bring them in to throw them. Just leave them here. We're good.
Greg, we're going to
put one of the best pieces of advice I got actually from a guy I met here in the Village. He's a longtime restaurateur. I mean, he's been in the restaurant business for decades and sits actually on the board of the largest KFC Taco Bell franchise in the country that's actually based in Dallas. And one of the first pieces of advice he gave me, we became pretty good friends. And one of the first things he told me, and he's run huge restaurants, you know, thousands and thousands of people a day across the country, whatever. He said, you know, it doesn't really matter what you do. There's always going to be somebody that's going to give you a one or a two star, really. And it really doesn't matter whether their experience was good or bad. They're going to give you a one or a two star anyway. And if you lose sleep over those people, you will ignore the 3 and 4 star people that you can make 4 and 5 star people. Focus on those people. The 1 and 2 star people, you could give them free food for the rest of their life. They're still 1 or 2 star people. That's the rating they're going to give you. focus on the threes and fours, make them fours and fives. They'll be customers for life. So that's what we do every day.
Smart advice. Smart advice.
Hard to argue with, Randy, isn't it?
No, you can't argue with it. Okay, Greg, we want to be respectful of your time. We appreciate you saying yes to this. Is there a place, is there a website that we can direct our audience to that you most want to hawk? And we're going to link up, by the way, in the show notes, we're going to link up every link that we know of, including social media profiles. But if there's one or two particular places you'd like to encourage the audience to go, please do.
Definitely check out BeehiveHSV.com. We got a lot of cool events. In fact, we're doing a big event with the Hot Springs Jazz Society this weekend. As I said, we do a lot with the community, with a lot of folks, and we're bringing some of the best jazz musicians in the state there this Sunday afternoon. It's going to be great. We have all our events there at the Beehive. It's lots and lots of fun. And of course, if you want great steaks and seafood and some great lakeside dining, check out explorelakeside.com. You can check out our menu. You can make reservations, do all those things down at Explore as well. So great outdoor seating right out over the water. It's beautiful.
It is.
We appreciate you being on. Thanks. It's been great meeting you.
Thanks. Great meeting you too. And come up and visit. Come see me.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely will. Thanks for listening to today's show. We hope you're a subscriber. Please visit the website, HSV, that's just short for Hot Springs Village, HSVinsideout.com. It's the show where Hot Springs Village, Arkansas is the star. We're going to have show notes for today's episode. We do for every episode. And we'll have links and stuff. So if you were driving or working out or walking the dog, no problem. Just go to the website, HSVinsideout.com, and find episode 2, and you'll see links to all the stuff that we talked about. We appreciate you. Keep listening. Tell a friend.